Chapter 5. To their haven under the hill, but oh for the touch of a vanished hand, and the sound of a voice that is still. Break, 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 at the foot of thy cracks, O sea. But the tender grace of a day that is dead will never come back to me. Yet it is not always so, for the speech of the sea is various, and wants not abundant resource of cheerfulness, hope, and lusty encouragement. And since I have been idling at the window here, the tide has risen. The boats are dancing on the bubbling water, the colliers are afloat again, the white beordered waves rush in, the children do chase the ebbing Neptune, and do fly him when he comes back. The radiant sails are gliding past the shore, and shining on the far horizon. All the sea is sparkling, heaving, swelling up with life and beauty, this bright morning. Our French watering place, having earned, by many years of fidelity, the right to be sometimes inconstant to our English watering place, we have dallied for two or three seasons with a French watering place. Once solely known to us as a town with a very long street, beginning with an abattoir and ending with a steamboat, which it seemed our fate to behold only at daybreak on winter mornings, when in the days before continental railroads, just sufficiently awake to know that we were most uncomfortably asleep, it was our destiny always to clatter through it, in the coupe of the diligence from Paris, with a sea of mud behind us, and a sea of tumbling waves before. In relation to which latter monster, our mind's eye now recalls a worthy Frenchman in a sealskin cap with a braided hood over it, once our traveling companion in the coupe aforesaid, who, waking up with a pale and crumpled visage, and looking ruefully out at the grim row of breakers enjoying themselves fanatically on an instrument of torture called the bar, apostrophe inquired of us, whether we were ever sick at sea? Both to prepare his mind for the abject creature we were presently to become, and also to afford him consolation, we replied, "Sir, your servant is always sick, when it is possible to be so." Apostrophe he returned, altogether uncheered by the bright example, "Ah, heaven, but I am always sick, even when it is impossible to be so." Apostrophe, the means of communication between the French capital and our French watering place are wholly changed since those days. But, the channel remains unbridged as yet, and the old floundering and knocking about go on there. It must be confessed, that saving in reasonable and therefore rare sea weather, the act of arrival at our French watering place from England, is difficult to be achieved with dignity. Several little circumstances combine to render the visitor an object of humiliation. In the first place, the steamer no sooner touches the port, than all the passengers fall into captivity. Being boarded by an overpowering force of custom house officers, and marched into a gloomy dungeon. In the second place, the road to this dungeon is fenced off with ropes breast high, and outside those ropes all the English in the place who have lately been seasick, and are now well, assemble in their best clothes, to enjoy the degradation of their dilapidated fellow creatures. Oh, my gracious, how ill this one has been! Apostrophe, here's a damp one coming next. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here's a pale one. Apostrophe, oh, ain't he green in the face, this next one. Apostrophe, apostrophe, even we yourself, not deficient in natural dignity, have a lively remembrance of staggering up this detested lane one September day in a gale of wind, when we were received like an irresistible comic actor, with a burst of laughter and applause, occasioned by the extreme imbecility of our legs. We were coming to the third place. In the third place, the captives, being shut up in the gloomy dungeon, are strained, two or three at a time, into an inner cell, to be examined as to passports, and across the doorway of communication, stands a military creature making a bar of his arm. Two ideas are generally present to the British mind during these ceremonies. First, that it is necessary to make for the cell with violent struggles, as if it were a lifeboat, and the dungeon a ship going down. Secondly, that the military creature's arm is a national affront, which the government at home ought instantly to take up. Apostrophe the British mind and body becoming heated by these fantasies. Delirious answers are made to inquiries, and extravagant actions performed. Thus, Johnson persists in giving Johnson as his baptismal name, and substituting for his ancestral designation the National Dam. Apostrophe apostrophe neither can he by any means be brought to recognize the distinction between a portmanteau key and a passport, but will obstinately persevere in tendering the one when asked for the other. This brings him to the fourth place, in a state of mere idiocy, and when he is, in the fourth place, cast out at a little door into a howling wilderness of touters, he becomes a lunatic with wild eyes, and floating hair until rescued and soothed. If friendless and unrescued, he is generally put into a railway omnibus and taken to Paris. But, our French watering place, when it is once got into, is a very enjoyable place. It has a varied and beautiful country around it, and many characteristic and agreeable things within it. To be sure, it might have fewer bad smells and less decaying refuse, and it might be better drained, and much cleaner in many parts, and therefore infinitely more healthy. Still, it is a bright, airy, pleasant, cheerful town, and if you were to walk down either of its three well-paved main streets, towards 5 o'clock in the afternoon, when delicate odors of cookery fill the air, and its hotel windows, it is full of hotels, give glimpses of long tables set out for dinner, and made to look sumptuous by the aid of napkins folded fan-wise, you would rightly judge it to be an uncommonly good town, to eat and drink in. We have an old walled town, rich in cool public wells of water, on the top of a hill within and above the present business town. And if it were some hundreds of miles further from England, instead of being, on a clear day, within sight of the grass growing in the crevices of the chalk cliffs of Dover, you would long ago have been bored to death about that town. It is more picturesque and quaint than half the innocent places which tourists, following their leader like sheep, have made impostors of. To say nothing of its houses with grave courtyards, its queer by corners, and its many windowed streets white and quiet in the sunlight, there is an ancient belfry in it that would have been in all the annuals and albums, going and gone, these 100 years, if it had but been more expensive to get at. Happily it has escaped so well, being only in our French watering place, that you may like it of your own accord in a natural manner, without being required to go into convulsions about it. We regard it as one of the later blessings of our life, that Bilkins, the only authority on taste, never took any notice, that we can find out, of our French watering place. Bilkins never wrote about it, never pointed out anything to be seen in it, never measured anything in it, always left it alone. For which relief, heaven bless the town and the memory of the immortal Bilkins likewise. There is a charming walk, arched and shaded by trees, on the old walls, that form the four sides of this high town, whence you get glimpses of the streets below, and changing views of the other town, and of the river, and of the hills, and of the sea. It is made more agreeable and peculiar by some of the solemn houses, that are rooted in the deep streets below, bursting into a fresher existence atop, and having doors and windows, and even gardens, on these ramparts. A child going in at the courtyard gate of one of these houses, climbing up the many stairs, and coming out at the fourth floor window, might conceive himself another Jack, alighting on enchanted ground from another beanstalk. It is a place wonderfully populous in children, English children, with governesses reading novels as they walk down the shady lanes of trees, or nursemaids interchanging gossip on the seats, French children with their smiling bonnets in snow-white caps, and themselves if little boys in straw headgear like beehives, work baskets and church hassocks. 3 years ago, there were three weazen old men, one bearing a frayed red ribbon in his threadbare buttonhole, always to be found walking together among these children, before dinner time. If they walked for an appetite, they doubtless lived and pension were contracted for otherwise their poverty would have made it a rash action. They were stooping, blear-eyed, Dull old men, slipshod and shabby, in long-skirted short-waisted coats and meager trousers, and yet with a ghost of gentility hovering in their company. They spoke little to each other, and looked as if they might have been politically discontented, if they had had vitality enough. Once, we overheard Red Ribbon feebly complain to the other two that somebody, or something, was a robber. Apostrophe, and then they all three set their mouths, so that they would have ground their teeth, if they had had any. The ensuing winter gathered Red Ribbon unto the great company of faded ribbons, and next year the remaining two were there getting themselves entangled with hoops and dolls, familiar mysteries to the children probably in the eyes of most of them, harmless creatures who had never been like children, and whom children could never be like. Another winter came, and another old man went, and so, this present year, the last of the triumvirate, left off walking it was no good, now and sat by himself on a little solitary bench, with the hoops and the dolls as lively as ever all about him. In the Place d'Armes of this town, a little decayed market is held, which seems to slip through the old gateway, like water, and go rippling down the hill, to mingle with the murmuring market in the lower town, and get lost in its movement and bustle. It is very agreeable on an idle summer morning, to pursue this market stream from the hilltop. It begins, dozingly and dully, with a few sacks of corn, starts into a surprising collection of boots and shoes, goes brawling down the hill in a diversified channel of old cordage, old iron, old crockery, old clothes, civil and military, old rags, new cotton goods, flaming prints of saints, little looking glasses, and incalculable lengths of tape, dives into a back way, keeping out of sight for a little while, as streams will, or only sparkling for a moment in the shape of a market drinking shop, and suddenly reappears behind the great church, shooting itself into a bright confusion of white-capped women and blue-bloused men, poultry, vegetables, fruits, flowers, pots, pans, praying chairs, soldiers, country butter, umbrellas and other sunshades, girl porters waiting to be hired with baskets at their backs, and one weazen little old man in a cocked hat, wearing a cuirass of drinking glasses and carrying on his shoulder a crimson temple fluttering with flax, like a glorified pavior's rammer without the handle, who rings a little bell in all parts of the scene, and cries his cooling drink hola, hola, ho, ho, ho. In a shrill cracked voice that somehow makes itself heard, above all the chaffering and vending hum. Early in the afternoon, the whole course of the stream is dry. The praying chairs are put back in the church, the umbrellas are folded up, the unsold goods are carried away, the stalls and stands disappear, the square is swept, the hackney coaches lounge there to be hired, and on all the country roads, if you walk about, as much as we do, you will see the peasant women, always neatly and comfortably dressed, riding home, with the pleasantest saddle furniture of clean milk pails, bright butter kegs, and the like, on the jolliest little donkeys in the world. We have another market in our French watering place, that is to say, a few wooden hutches in the open street, down by the port devoted to fish. Our fishing boats are famous everywhere, and our fishing people, though they love lively colors, and taste as neutral sea bilkins, are among the most picturesque people we ever encountered. They have not only a quarter of their own in the town itself, but they occupy whole villages of their own on the neighboring cliffs. Their churches and chapels are their own. They consort with one another, they intermarry among themselves, their customs are their own, and their costume is their own and never changes. As soon as one of their boys can walk, he is provided with a long bright red nightcap. And one of their men would as soon think of going afloat without his head, as without that indispensable appendage to it. Then, they wear the noblest boots, with the hugest tops flapping and bulging over anyhow, above which, they encase themselves in such wonderful overalls and petticoat trousers, made to all appearance of tarry old sails, so additionally stiffened with pitch and salt, that the wearers have a walk of their own, and go straddling and swinging about among the boats, and barrels and nets and rigging, a sight to see. Then, their younger women, by dint of going down to the sea barefoot, to fling their baskets into the boats as they come in with the tide, and bespeak the first fruits of the haul with propitiatory promises to love and marry that dear fisherman who shall fill that basket like an angel, have the finest legs ever carved by nature in the brightest mahogany, and they walk like Juno. Their eyes, too, are so lustrous that their long gold earrings turn dull beside those brilliant neighbors. And when they are dressed, what with these beauties, and their fine fresh faces, and their many petticoats, striped petticoats, red petticoats, blue petticoats, always clean and smart, and never too long, and their homemade stockings, mulberry colored, blue, brown, purple, lilac, which the older women, taking care of the Dutch-looking children, sit in all sorts of places knitting, knitting, knitting from morning to night, and what with their little saucy bright blue jackets, knitted to, and fitting close to their handsome figures, and what with the natural grace with which they wear the commonest cap, or fold the commonest handkerchief round their luxuriant hair, we say, in a word, and out of breath, that taking all these premises into our consideration, it has never been a matter of the least surprise to us, that we have never once met, in the cornfields, on the moldy roads, by the breezy windmills, on the plots of short sweet grass overhanging the sea anywhere a young fisherman and fisherwoman of our French watering place together, but the arm of that fisherman has invariably been, as a matter of course, and without any absurd attempt, to disguise so plain a necessity, round the neck or waist of that fisherwoman. And we have had no doubt whatever, standing looking at their uphill streets, house rising above house, and terrace above terrace, and bright garments here and there lying sunning on rough stone parapets, that the pleasant mist on all such objects, caused by their being seen through the brown nets hung across on poles to dry, is, in the eyes of every true young fisherman, a mist of love and beauty, setting off the goddess of his heart. Moreover, it is to be observed, that these are an industrious people, and a domestic people, and an honest people. And though we are aware, that at the bidding of Bilkins it is our duty, to fall down and worship the Neapolitans, we make bold very much to prefer the fishing people of our French watering place, especially since our last visit to Naples within these 12 months, when we found only 4 conditions of men remaining in the whole city. To wit, Lazzaroni, priests, spies, and soldiers, and all of them beggars, the paternal government having banished all its subjects except the rascals. But we can never henceforth separate our French watering place from our own landlord of 2 summers, M. Loyal Devasseur, citizen and town councillor. Permit us to have the pleasure of presenting M. Loyal Devasseur. His own family name is simply Loyal. But, as he is married, and as in that part of France a husband always adds to his own name the family name of his wife, he writes himself Loyal Devasseur. He owns a compact little estate of some 20 or 30 acres on the lofty hillside, and on it, he has built 2 country houses, which he lets furnished. They are by many degrees the best houses that are so let near our French watering place. We have had the honor of living in both, and can testify. The entrance hall of the first we inhabited was ornamented with a plan of the estate, representing it as about twice the size of Ireland, insomuch that when we were yet new to the property M. Loyal always speaks of it as La Propriete, we went 3 miles straight on end in search of the bridge of Austerlitz, which we afterwards found to be immediately outside the window. The chateau of the old guard, in another part of the grounds, and, according to the plan, about 2 leagues from the little dining room, we sought in vain for a week, until Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.